I'm Marty Moscowen. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. My guests were elected to Congress in November and joined the more than 50 new members of the House in January. Democrat Brendan Boyle, who has served in the State House for 6 years, is the new congressman representing Pennsylvania's 13th District, a position previously held by Allison Schwartz. Republican Ryan Costello has served as chairman of the Chester County Board of Commissioners since 2011. He's taking over Jim Gerlach's job representing Pennsylvania's 6th District. They have been through orientation. They have gotten their offices, are in the process of hiring new staff. We'll hear why they decided to run for office, what initiatives they'll bring to Washington, and how they plan to get things done in the wake of one of the least productive Congresses in decades. Brendan Boyle joins us here in our Philadelphia studio, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone is Ryan Costello. And Ryan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let me begin with you, Brendan Boyle, just because I'm staring at you and we have some crackle on the phone here. Hopefully we can take care of that. Congress is held in such disfavor by the public, but clearly this was a job that you wanted. How come?
Obviously some sort of mental instability causes one to run for office. But no, I made the decision a while ago, about a dozen or 14 years ago or so, that I would leave the private sector and actually devote my professional life to public service. I believe in it as a profession, even though it is incredibly maligned. But it's actually a very important job. As a state legislator, I was voting on a $28 billion budget. As a federal legislator, as a congressman, we'll be voting on a multi-trillion dollar budget, and literally whether or not to put U.S. soldiers in harm's way, matters of war and peace. I tend to think that it should be people who devote themselves toward that as a profession. And so my running for Congress was really an extension of my decision to enter this field back about a decade ago.
To you, Ryan Costello, as I said, you were chairman of the Chester County Board of Commissioners. What got you interested in Congress?
Well, very similar to Brendan in the sense that I've enjoyed public service. I feel that I've provided value to the taxpayers and families and businesses in Chester County. And I think that we're at a time in our nation where we do need elected officials that want to work together, find common ground. And we know what the challenging issues that we're facing are. And it really just takes men and women who are willing to accept the fact that they're not going to get everything they want in terms of ideological preferences or policy goals, and that you have to show respect, work with others in an effort to move our country forward in a way that demonstrates American values and pro-growth policies. And I would just echo what Brendan said on the point that it is a maligned profession, but it takes good people to work together to do good things. And I've tried to do that in Chester County. I have a record of bipartisanship, and I think that we need more of that in the nation's capital. And so when the opportunity presented itself, I felt that in these times that my experience and skill set were suited to ably replace Congressman Gerlach, and I'm hoping to do that.
Back to you, Ryan Costello. D.C., a much larger stage than the stage you have had in Chester County. How, though, as freshmen, knowing the hierarchy in Congress, how can you bring the spirit of bipartisanship to that body?
Well, I think it's one person at a time, and I'm certainly not the only one. I'm sure Brendan, I don't know Brendan too well, but I'm sure that he would say things quite similar. I've met a lot of other newly elected representatives who feel the same way, and voters respond, I think, to representatives as much by how they go about deliberating and discussing issues as on their actual vote. I mean, the imperfect piece of any legislative body is that you have to vote one way or the other, even though you may not agree entirely with everything in every particular bill. And so it really becomes a deliberative process where you have to choose how to vote based on your values and your priorities. And if voters know that you are thoughtful and open-minded and that you're trying to do the right thing and that you don't claim to know it all, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt, because some of these votes are very, very tricky, and they're not always what I would call clean votes. And so I think the other part of it is just remaining accessible and being transparent. And I think in the age of social media, there's a lot more opportunities for constituents who really want to live and breathe this stuff along with representatives to be able to have that sort of relationship with your constituents.
Well, picking up on that, and those are, of course, very laudable goals, and going back to you, Brendan Boyle, and the public wants elected officials to work in a bipartisan way, but sometimes one wonders whether the parties want their elected officials to do the same.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I come out of an experience this past year winning what was literally the most expensive congressional primary in the country. And here in Pennsylvania, since we're a closed primary state, it was only Democrats voting in my Democratic primary. I actually campaigned openly in a primary about the value of bipartisanship. I pointed to my relationship with Republican state representatives, especially from Montgomery County, and some of the things that we had done together. Actually, myself and another Republican state rep, Tom Mert, he and I would do joint events together, constituent service events and kind of voter education or constituent education events. And people really seem to respond to that, that they crave that. And I think especially after the last 4 or 5 years or so of complete inaction from Washington and hyper-partisanship, I think there's more of a desire now than there was 5 or 6 years ago for people who are willing to compromise and just get something done. I'll give you an example. It was almost exactly a year ago now that I voted for the transportation bill, which was probably the most in Pennsylvania, which was probably the most controversial vote of my 6 years there. The first major transportation bill since Tom Ridge's first year as governor. I stood up on the House floor and I said, you know, I don't agree with everything that's in this bill. There were some labor provisions that for me were a difficult vote, but I agreed with the majority of it. And it's about time that both sides don't allow the little bit they may disagree to hold up a bill, even if they agree with the majority of it.
I mean, Ryan, how do you sell that in Washington? I don't mean to sound overly cynical here, but we've done a lot of shows about the partisan environment in D.C.
Sure.
and the bad feelings between the two parties, between the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. and the White House themselves. And knowing that freshmen, you come in with big, bold ideas, but there's also a culture. There's a hierarchy there.
There is. I would say, one, first off, I believe the benefit is that neither of us, okay, as well as every other newly elected member of Congress, carries with us the scars of those who have fought the partisan battles down there. So I think it's we can all take a deep breath and realize that we have a blank slate, and it's really our own individual responsibilities to comport ourselves however we feel best represents our district and our voters. And so I think for me, two things come to mind. First, and this was somebody really gave me some good advice recently with this. A lot of times when you're talking to your constituents now that you are actually elected, they're not always interested in hearing what you have to say. What they're interested in is you listening to what they have to say. And that was a very important point to me. And I think the more we can listen as elected members, the better we're going to do, because the more you get caught up in the 24-hour news cycle and you start using the language that's used in the 24-hour news cycle, and it's not the kind of language that I think represents the way most voters think, and that's why voters get turned off by a lot of politicians. And so I think a lot of it really does get back to one's approach. I do think it's very difficult to break through a lot of the noise, and it certainly takes a lot of time and a lot of patience. In other words, let's just say I go down there and I am very faithful to the types of things that I've spoke about during the campaign. I'm not convinced that all the voters in my district are going to even know that because when they turn on the television at night or they read the newspaper or their Facebook feed, they're not going to be seeing Ryan Costello after Ryan Costello after Ryan Costello saying all these wonderful things and being conciliatory. They're going to see certain members of each party more on the ideological pure or extreme end in their feed and on their television screen because that's just the way that the news cycle often works. So I think it takes some time, but I also think that the language one uses and how they go about approaching their voting is as important as anything.
What kind of advice did Alison Schwartz give you, Brendan Boyle? You're essentially taking the job that she used to have.
Right. Well, I've as a state legislator in the 13th congressional have already had a good working relationship with Alison and her staff, especially when it comes to constituent service issues. You know, the whole time we've been talking about basically one half of the job, which is the in the Capitol part. Voting on policy, making policy, voting on legislation, voting on bills. But there is that other half of the job, which is the constituent service angle. That's incredibly important. I mean, in my office, we've serviced 12,000 constituents. Now, some of those issues were certainly pro forma, but a number of them were actually quite difficult. And by the time the person came into our office, had gone elsewhere and wasn't able to get help. And they tend to be a variety of issues and not just government issues. So I really have always made an effort to stress the job in the Capitol, but also the job back home. They're both equally important. It's like your left hand and your right hand, and you need to be good with both.
Do you see your job, though, as bringing projects back to your district?
I do. And this is where I know this has become controversial in recent years. I will be very upfront. If there are members of Congress in other states that don't want to bring projects home, that's great news for me because we need them here in Philadelphia and in Montgomery County and in the Philadelphia area. Literally in the Constitution, the job says it is the role of Congress to be appropriators. I don't think there is anything wrong with saying I as a member support Project X, be transparent about it, put your name on it, so then that way you can claim credit and also get the blame and that you defend it. We have a great deal of needs in this area, especially as an older region in an older state, and I tend to think that if you're an effective representative and you're working hard, you will get a disproportionately greater value for your constituents than maybe some others who aren't working as hard.
Ryan, we're almost up on a break here. I'm assuming, will you be doing the same for your constituents?
Yes. Since you're up against a break, I'll leave it at that. We can come back after the break.
I do appreciate that. Well, yep. We will take that very short break and then get back to our conversation. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times, a show we do this time on Thursdays, spending the hour discussing a whole host of election-related issues, political issues, talking with Republican Ryan Costello, who just said yes, joining us by telephone. He served as chairman of the Chester County Board of Commissioners since 2011. He's now going to be representing Pennsylvania's 6th District. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio, Democrat Brendan Boyle. He'll be representing Pennsylvania's 13th District. He served 6 years in the State House. 1-888-477-9499. To join our conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The 114th Congress will be convened on January 6th, and our guests, Brendan Boyle and Ryan Costello, will be part of the freshman class. We asked them to join us on Ballot Talks on Radio Times to talk about what they want to do when they go to Washington. We want to hear from you. What do you want them to do when they go to Washington? And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and you can also put a comment on our Facebook page. Ryan, going back to you, and picking up on something that I read about both of you and Brendan, you're both interested in the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee down in Washington. How come?
Well, and just to add to what you said about calling in, I want to make sure my friends, particularly from Berks and Chester County, are calling in because I've gotten some texts here, so I know that they're listening.
Good. Okay.
Transportation is an area where I feel that there is bipartisan agreement that we need to create a steady and predictable funding stream. The Highway Trust Fund is out of money. And it's also an area where, not only from a public safety perspective, we can appreciate what happens when our roads and bridges aren't in good repair, but also from an economic development perspective. It's my opinion that the way that government has gone about facilitating economic development in regions through tax sweeteners or incentives or abatement programs isn't the smart long-term way to go about creating economic development, because a company will just leave after 10 or 20 years when their sweetheart deal is up. The way to do it is to create a world-class infrastructure program that businesses know that when they decide to either relocate there or stay there, that the ports, the airports, the road system, the public transportation system is in good repair. It also leads to folks wanting to live in that area and stay in that area. And that's the way to go about creating a world-class region. One thing Brendan and I share is we represent residents, constituents, that don't necessarily live and work in their same congressional district. Some of these congressional districts in southeastern Pennsylvania, it's sort of a hodgepodge.
You can drive through all over
three
the place.
Different districts in 10 minutes. So it's really it's very much a regional issue. And the Philadelphia region is a very tremendous region to live in. We have great schools, great companies. We have a great entrepreneurial community. And what we want to make sure that we do is that we remain competitive, not just against New Jersey or Delaware or New York City, but against the Midwest, the South, and other countries, increasingly so. And the way to do that is a strong educational system and first-class infrastructure. And that's where T&I, given the fact that I want to be somebody that's trying to find common ground and move things forward, to me, is a committee where that kind of work is going to get done.
And I want to pick up on that, and we should add that Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania, a representative, is chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Going back to you, Brendan, as you said, you voted for the Transportation Infrastructure Bill in Pennsylvania. The Highway Trust Fund is going to run out of money. I checked May 31st of next year. That requires figuring out how to get more money. Does that also require increasing the gas tax on diesel gas and on regular gas?
This does not exactly make one the most popular, but frankly, yes. It's a tough vote. I put it up as a state legislator. It hasn't been raised in 20 years. So in real terms, that means it's actually been cut every single year. If you were just to put it back where it would be in inflation-adjusted dollars, that's something that we need to do. We have to be careful, though, that we shouldn't just limit the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee to just the fact that our roads, oh, by the way, are falling apart, and more so in this state than any other state in the country. We have more miles of roads in need of repair than any other state in the country, and more bridges that are rated structurally deficient than any other state in the country. Those are two areas we do not want to be number one in. But in addition to that, we have a historic opportunity to really invest in transit and in rail for the 21st century. Japan just celebrated the 50th anniversary of their bullet train, and we're talking about attempting to do the same thing here, which would be such an economic driver for the Philadelphia area. If you could, as the train technology exists today, shorten the time from downtown Philadelphia to midtown Manhattan 38 minutes and make it from downtown Philadelphia to Union Station in D.C., only a 50-minute ride. Imagine what that would do as an economic driver for our city and our region. So I happen to think that it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do economically, environmentally, to focus more on transit. But, oh, by the way, as a congressman representing Philadelphia and suburban Philadelphia, it's probably in our economic interest more than any other part of the country.
Going back to you, Ryan.
I would just add to that, everything that Brendan said relative to where we need to be focused from a public transportation perspective, the Philadelphia airport and our port system are definitely economic drivers, and making sure, now in addition to roadways, we're also going to have an FAA reauthorization bill. And you look around the country, those regions that get ahead and stay ahead are regions that have airports that you can get in and out of quickly in predictable fashion. And we have not only Philadelphia Airport, but we have some smaller regional airports in southeastern Pennsylvania. And it's important that we fund that. The other element to that with the ports is we're going to have a reauthorization bill on a lot of the infrastructure that relates to our waterways and our ports and the industry of maritime, which is something I'm learning a lot more about because there's no ports in Chester County. But there is just a tremendous amount of velocity to economic development and job creation when you're properly funding your infrastructure.
Well, going back to you, Ryan, does that mean your support for raising the gas tax?
Well, what I think we need to do is see what the bill looks like before we say. What I'm not saying is we can't do A, B, or C. What I'm saying is let's see what the bill looks like, because there's a lot of ways to do this, and I haven't seen a bill which says here's precisely the strategy to go about funding it over a six-year term.
But if experts were to come to that conclusion and they would say, you know, the only way you're going to get what you wanted, what the two of you wanted, is to raise these taxes, would you vote for that?
Well, what I've said is it's non-negotiable that we need to pass a six-year bill that provides a steady, predictable stream. And I have always campaigned on saying that it's my job to make sure that I can say yes to things that need to get done and not trying to justify my no vote based on some other set of principles. The other thing that I would say, and look, I'll be very candid with you, there are Republicans across the country that signed the Grover Norquist No Tax Pledge.
That's
I didn't
right.
take that pledge because I think that there are certain circumstances where you need to look at projecting what are the needs of this country over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and I don't think you should be tying yourself to saying you won't do certain things. And so I think that that very much puts me in the mainstream of my constituency.
That's Ryan Costello. He'll be representing Pennsylvania's 6th District when he goes to Washington. The 114th Congress will convene early in January. He's part of the freshman class, as is Brendan Boyle. He'll be representing Pennsylvania's 13th District. It's Ballot Talks on Radio Times. Again, the time that we set aside every week to focus on election-related issues, on politics as well. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get a comment from Harold and Drexel Hill. He said early on, they both said that being a congressman is maligned. That is wrong. The people who have served in recent years are the ones who've been maligned. It's not the profession. It's the people who haven't gotten anything done. Since I'm looking at you, Brendan Boyle, you agree with that?
It's an interesting point, but of course it's hard to separate the people from the profession. I think that when you look at the public's approval rating of Congress, which is somewhere in the high single digits.
I think it's 11% the last I checked.
Well, I'm glad to see that my
election making it 12% at the end of January.
I'm glad to see that Ryan and I are already having a positive impact on Congress's approval rating. But so clearly we couldn't do any worse. I do think that the great deal of cynicism that's out there does have an effect on the institution, and it's incumbent upon those of us, especially those of us who are coming into the jobs new, to attempt to turn that around. You know, there's nothing inevitable about this. If you look at Gallup, just 8 years ago, the approval rating of Congress was in the low 40s. Now, low 40s isn't particularly great either, but low 40s when compared to 11% looks incredible. Set off fireworks if we were to achieve that. And that was just a decade ago. So if we could start solving problems, actually getting legislation passed and signed, and end this sort of ideological purism and ideological rigidity, I do think you would see approval ratings begin to increase of Congress.
Ryan, I have an email for you from Joseph. It says here, my company has dropped all health insurance. Will Ryan Costello help repeal Obamacare so my family can be insured again? And I believe the House has attempted to either repeal it or change it something like 50 times. What side of that issue are you on?
I'm on the side of knowing that President Obama is not going to sign a bill that repeals the ACA in its entirety. And so instead, I want to focus on a couple things eliminating the 40-hour work week, or what I would say the 30-hour work week threshold, by which a lot of companies are really creating a part-time employee, a pent-up part-time employees, where they'd like to hire them for more time, but they can't afford the ACA cost. The other thing is the individual mandate, and particularly also in this region, the medical device tax, which is a job killer. And then the final part of that is the health insurance tax. I mean, I will say this to you: the medical profession, by and large, those that are in private practice, find Obamacare to be suffocating. It takes the discretion out of medical practitioners. It puts government in between the patient and the doctor. And so there is a lot of reforms that need to be made in order to make it more manageable over the next 2 years so that you restore the doctor-patient relationship. I would specifically point to Medicare Part D. And if you look, the government has set forth certain standards that the private sector then goes in and competes. And by having private competition and consumer choice, you've been able to drive down the cost of that program by a lot, even relative to what the CBO scored it in 2003 when it passed. So that's where I would take – that's where my focus is going to be over the next 2 years.
Well, let me give Brendan Boyle a chance to respond to that. I mean, if this comes up again, and it's pretty inevitable, it will in the House. Where does that leave you?
Well, I'm generally a supporter of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, let's look at the facts. Over the last 2 years now, since it became effective, the number of those who are without health insurance has dropped 30%, the biggest single drop in American history. For the first time in three decades, the rate of increase in health care costs, which had always been double the rate of inflation over the last 25 years, is actually finally coming down, which is incredibly important not just for the Affordable Care Act, but the affordability long term of all of our health insurance programs, considering health care spending is now almost 17% of our GDP. Now, at the same time, like any big program that has passed, whether it was Social Security in the 1930s, Medicare in 1965, Medicare Part D about a decade ago, and now the Affordable Care Act, it is only inevitable that 4, 5, 6 years down the line, you're going to see unintended consequences. You're going to see things that did not exactly work out as they should have been planned. I'm open-minded, frankly, to looking at tweaks. If there are those on the Republican side who just want to vote for the 54th time to repeal Affordable Care Act and put us back where we were, that's a mistake and obviously not going to happen. I give Ryan a lot of credit, his pragmatism on this issue. But if there are those who want to say, let's take a few pieces of this that are not working and then let's in an open-minded way revisit that, that is something that I'm completely open to.
And this is Ryan, hold on just 1 second. I just have to do something very quickly here. And you're listening to Radio Times. So you're listening to Ballot Talks on Radio Times here on WHYY. Go ahead, Ryan Costello.
Well, I think the emailer hit on something else, though, and that this has clearly hurt small business growth. And I think some of the consequences here, while unintended for many of us, were very foreseeable. Brendan pointed to the fact that more people are insured. That's true. But the question is whether they're getting the care that they need. And the premiums for many are so high that people are actually not going and getting the care that they might otherwise if premiums were a little bit lower. My big issue is when you look at the medical device tax, that's a tax on innovation. That's a tax on companies that are out there trying to improve public health outcomes. I would also add, here in Chester County, we have $1.3 or $1.4 million obligation that will start in 2017 unless we make our health care plans less, I guess the term is generous, than they are. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say that they're generous. They're just good health care plans, and that's what's known as the Cadillac tax. So what I don't like about this is all of the built-in almost incentives to push everyone into the exchanges and out of the private health care market. And I think That's how a lot of people feel in private industry.
Because I'm looking at the clock, we've got a lot of people that want to join the conversation and some other issues that I want to talk to both of you about as well. I appreciate that back and forth. Let me toss this to you, Brendan Boyle. And we've seen some better job numbers in recent months. In fact, over the last couple of years, nonetheless, a number of those jobs, a good percentage of those jobs, are low-paying jobs.
Right.
And you're seeing a middle class that's really stuck.
I made the centerpiece of my campaign exactly about these issues that I call my campaign was Fighting for the Forgotten Middle Class. The very fact of the matter is that while you have unemployment rate now dropping and has been dropping for 54 consecutive months, and you have the stock market literally at record highs, if you look at median household income, in real terms, it is lower today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So when you look at this contradiction where, on the one hand, economic data looks positive, but then the vast majority of people aren't feeling it, it's not because they're overly pessimistic without justification. They're not feeling it because they perceive that things are not going well, because in fact for them in their financial situation, things aren't. We need to do things, and it takes government. Government doesn't create jobs, but it creates the conditions under which job growth can happen. It creates the conditions under which people can get good paying jobs and a fair day's wage for a fair day's work. The fact that we have the minimum wage in real terms lower today than at any point since Harry Truman's been president. The fact that average wage growth, particularly in this area, is negative over the last 12 years. These are things that strike at the heart of the middle class. And finally, I would say, and this is an important, something I feel strongly about, because I'm someone who grew up in a row home in Philadelphia. Parents worked hard for a very long time to be able to afford a home and to send their kids to college. For too many Americans who are in working families, both parents working, it is actually harder today to get ahead than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and that's not right.
We have to take another short break. I'm sure, Ryan Costello, you want to add to that. We will do that after this very short break. It's Ballot Talks on Radio Times. The voice you just heard, Brendan Boyle, the new member of Congress representing Pennsylvania's 13th district. Ryan Costello representing Pennsylvania's 6th district, joining us by telephone, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moskowain, talking with Democrat Brendan Boyle, a new member of the House of Representatives, and also with Republican Ryan Costello, also a new member of the House of Representatives. Both of them voted into office in the November election. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 to join our conversation. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times. Ryan Costello, we were talking about, yes, there has been job creation pretty consistent over the last couple of years, not enough to recover from the 2009 recession. But nonetheless, a lot of those jobs don't pay what I think would be considered a true middle class living. What can Congress do about that?
Well, I think we need tax reform both on the individual and the corporate side. And corporate tax reform doesn't necessarily sound like it's going to be helpful. The term corporate tax reform, it's not really about putting more money in the boardroom. That's really where you're going to see wage growth. The other area is regulatory relief. I mean, our federal bureaucracy continues to churn out more and more rules and regulations, which drives up costs in small business. I saw a study in all businesses recently, and I don't want to cite it too specifically because it's in the back of my head, but a couple $1,000s per employee cost that you can attribute to the increased amount of regulations that's come out in the past 6 to 8 years. The other area is energy. I mean, if we've seen anything in the last year, it's that when we go to pump our gas, it doesn't cost quite as much. So that does put a little bit of money back in our pocket or takes a little bit less out. The more that we become a leader in energy production, the more we're doing a couple things, both from a national security but also an economic security perspective. And then finally, there's some trade deals coming up. The more we promote free trade, the more there's going to be demand for our products and our services, which will also lead to more job creation. And Brennan hit the nail on the head. The government isn't in the business of creating jobs. We're in the business of enabling job growth and wage growth to occur. And it's as much about wage growth happening through job creation as it is making sure that we're not, as a federal government, making people's lives more confusing and expensive. And I feel a lot of people feel that, and I do, that the federal government oftentimes makes things worse and more expensive and more confusing than they need to be. So that's the other side of it.
Do you agree with that, Brendan?
Respectfully, and become friends with Ryan, but I don't. I mean, certainly none of us likes over-regulation, but at the same time, I don't think we want to go back to the other extreme before 2007, 2008, when there was under-regulation that allowed Wall Street banks to do whatever they wanted and, frankly, plummeted the worldwide economy. And we're still recovering from that today, more than 6 years later. You know, it is just too hard and too difficult right now for most families to afford the basic necessities. Part of the reason is Ryan talked about the tax code, and I agree there definitely need to be changes in it. One change I would like to see is right now in our tax code, if you were a company such as the company that owns the Nabisco in Northeast Philadelphia, and you close that building and you build a brand new center in Monterrey, Mexico, you actually have a tax incentive to do that. Why don't we turn that incentive around and make sure that you have an incentive to create jobs right here at home, or at least to maintain them? Why don't we have a tax system that says Warren Buffett's secretary shouldn't pay a higher tax rate than Warren Buffett? Why shouldn't we have a tax code in which the middle-class family in Abington or Lansdale or Philadelphia is taxed at a higher rate than multimillionaires and multibillionaires who receive most of their income through passive income? Those are things that we absolutely should change and would help most Americans.
Let me get Joe from, looks like Lumberton, to join us. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yeah. I just had a question related to net neutrality.
Sure.
And I was wondering how the representatives support net neutrality itself and statewide and nationwide digital infrastructure. I could take my answer off the air.
I appreciate that, Joe. Thanks for calling in. Ryan, you want to take that first?
The only thing I can say on net neutrality is I have more to learn on that one. So I don't have a position. And then we spoke a little earlier about, I think, and both of us agree that maintaining our competitive edge is about making sure that we are up to speed on our infrastructure needs, and that means funding it adequately.
And do you see the internet as sort of part of infrastructure, Brendan?
Yes, it is. And that was when earlier when we talked about infrastructure, it immediately went to roads and bridges. I wanted to be clear to make the point, while that is critically important, we can't look at infrastructure in just a narrow way. Our broadband is part of our infrastructure. Our waterways, our water system, our electrical grid, which frankly is becoming a national security issue because of its vulnerabilities, particularly in summertime, and we've seen that over the last decade. Yeah. That is all part of a nation's infrastructure. And ensuring that we properly regulate companies and ensuring that we have an internet that's wide and open and free and the same way it is today equal access for all, it is incredibly important.
Let me go back to you, Ryan, and again throw something else on the table here. You were endorsed by the National Rifle Association, the NRA. Once you get to Congress, and you know, God forbid, there's another Sandy situation, a horrific mass murder like that. Are there any kind of gun control issues that you would support?
You obviously have to take those sorts of pieces of legislation one by one. There are hundreds of Second Amendment related pieces of legislation that are in our Judiciary Committee right now, and So without knowing the specifics, it's very difficult for me to comment one way or the other. But you are right. I heard a lot about that during the campaign. My opponent liked to always bring that issue up.
Well, are you proud of being supported by the NRA?
Oh, I think there's a lot of Second Amendment supporters in my congressional district, and I was supported by them, the National Education Association, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, the Chambers of Commerce, NFIB. I mean, there's a litany of different organizations.
Let me toss something to you, Brandon Boyle. This came up when you were running your position on abortion. At one point in your career, you were considered a pro-life all-star by an organization, Democrats for Life of America. Also in the House, you introduced some legislation related to having physicians working in abortion clinics to be able to have or be required to have the ability to work at hospitals within a 30-mile reach or not.
Actually, not quite correct,
okay,
but I might have seen a few ads on this topic from a few of my opponents. And what I would say, generally, I've made clear that I strongly support Roe versus Wade. I support the law exactly as it is today. But I also made the point that when you talk about ideological purity, the abortion issue over my lifetime is a great example. You have one extreme on one side that equates birth control and abortion as the same thing. And then you have another extreme where if you vote for any sort of common sense restriction, you're somehow anti-women. And the sort of vitriol that happens on this issue is incredibly corrosive to our system. So I am someone who believes that, and my approach has always been that good people can disagree on this issue. I happen to come down on the choice side. But that said, good people can disagree on this issue, and let's come together and actually work to help women, to support women's health. Frankly, in many categories of women's health, our country doesn't even rank in the top 20 worldwide. I wish there was a lot more discussion on that than there is about treating this important issue as a political football.
Let me get to, looks like Betty from Erdenheim to join our conversation. Betty, go ahead. You're on Ballot Talks on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It seems as though your guests are intelligent, right-minded people who are about to embark on something that they take seriously. However, they're joining an organization that has very poor standard operating procedures that apparently has been going on forever. And that is that the unclean or the clean versus unclean bills, everything is, all these initiatives, these bills are in line at the last minute so that people of good conscience, right-minded people, can't really vote individually, separately on bills and vote the way they want. So why not stop bundling bills, vote on bills or initiatives separately so that you can vote for what your constituents really want?
Well, Betty, let me take your comment. I mean, Ryan Costello, when you get to Washington, first of all, do you agree with her?
Oh, I'm ready to vote for Betty, too. I agree.
Okay.
It is extremely frustrating. And without pointing fingers, I mean, ultimately what we want are bills related to a particular subject matter where you have what's known as regular order and you pass budgets on time. And you deal with things prospectively rather than these last-minute omnibus throw everything in together type stuff. I mean, that will frustrate me deeply if I'm put in that sort of a position. I totally agree with what Betty said because what it does is unclean is the word. I mean, then you're doing this balancing act and you're juggling all these various issues and you say, well, I don't like this stuff, but I like this stuff. And, you know, it's not really the way we should go about governing our country. And I would also add, as voters, it becomes very difficult to evaluate your elected officials when the elected official themselves may not really even like some of what they voted for or may have liked some of what they ultimately voted against because of the way this stuff sometimes appears before us.
Go ahead,
I'll say I've already been in this position as a state legislator, and I joked I have a good friend, Bob Freeman, a colleague from the Lehigh Valley who sits next to me in the House floor, and then my brother Kevin who sits next to him. And I joked to both of them, where is the yes but button? Because so many times on legislation, and I've been in this position, it's the most difficult. The most difficult votes for me have not been on the controversial issues, which I thought would be the case going in. That hasn't been the case. The most difficult votes are when you're confronted with a situation that the caller and Ryan exactly talked about, when you have five different bills that have been combined into one and you may agree with three of them and disagree with two of them. I can recall exactly a couple tax credits. I was put in that situation a couple Junes ago in voting on our state budget, and there were a few tax credits lumped in together, a couple of which I strongly agreed, in fact, was a strong proponent of, and then there were a few that I very much disagreed with. And then, of course, those votes end up being used against you, and the full story isn't told. So that is the difficult part of the legislation. I would say one area, and Harrisburg is by no means a perfect example that should be emulated, but there is one reform that we have at the state legislature that I would like to see at the federal level, and that is a 24-hour rule. So it used to be the case a decade ago that the Pennsylvania legislature would just sneak something in, it would be voted on a minute later, and then without disclosure could pass. One of the reforms of a decade ago was to institute a 24-hour rule. I think that should exist at the federal level as well. And while it doesn't make the system perfect, it does cut down on the chicanery a great deal.
And that's Brendan Boyle, also with us, Ryan Costello. And you're listening to Ballot Talks here on Radio Times on WHYY. Let me put this. This is something that I see both someone wants to call about, and there's also a comment about. Would either of you support something called regional fair housing? Have you looked at that, Ryan Costello?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure what that means. I am a land use lawyer, real estate lawyer by trade, so I'm happy to dig into it and offer an opinion, but I don't know offhand what that means.
Okay. Anything you want to say?
No, I've worked on a number of housing issues for the last 6 years, but that sounds like a specific program that I happen to be not aware of.
Well, here's a really easy then question for you. Where's your office? I know there was a lottery, Ryan, that you both, all freshmen participate in, and no one wants to be on the fifth floor. Apparently that's way out of the way or hard to get to. What was your number and where's your office?
Me first?
Yeah, you first. Go ahead, Ryan.
I got a good little story here. I got 52 out of 57.
Oh, dear.
And so then I left and went home and had my chief pick. So I just saw my office for the first time yesterday. I was down there. And it's what's known as a split office, which means the office isn't entirely together. So it's my office. Next to my office is the ladies' room. Next to the ladies' room is the rest of my office. And a little bit of a historical footnote is that it was the first congressional office of Lyndon Baines Johnson and the first congressional office of Dick Cheney. So how's that for
those walls could talk, Ryan. Well, go ahead, Brendan.
Well, actually, it's funny. Ryan and I have something in common. My office is the first floor at Cannon, 118.
Yeah, what was your lottery number?
My lottery number was 39 out of 57, and I was very close to being stuck with either the fifth floor at Cannon, where all the elevators don't reach it, or the split suite that Ryan unfortunately ended up getting. So I fortunately had pretty good luck and picked one of the last remaining offices, but before I ran into that situation. But one of the former occupants of my office, I just learned yesterday, was also Lyndon B. Johnson.
Wow.
So Ryan and I apparently have another thing in common, in that LBJ both sat in both of our offices.
Well, we're almost out of time here. I mean, what are the two of you going to do with each other as you go to Washington?
I'm going to treat them nice.
You're going to treat Ryan? You're going to treat Brendan nice?
Well, I think it helps that both become friends through these orientation programs. That is important. I know that we can work together on a number of issues. We're not going to agree on every issue, certainly, and we're both going to vote our districts and vote our consciences. But at the same time, especially when we're able to come together and represent this region as one voice, that can be incredibly effective. I did that with Republican state legislators in the Philadelphia area, and we were very effective when we were able to do that.
Well,
I would say
very quickly, Ryan. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're both. I mean, I'm 38. Brendan's 37, about to be 38. We're young guys. We're both from the region, and the more that we can speak with one voice as a region, and the more that we can both demonstrate that we're looking to find common ground, I think that is a good reflection of the values and the priorities of the region, even as we might disagree on certain. votes. And I think moving forward, we'd like to see more elected officials operate in a bipartisan.
All right. Only because we're out of time here. My thanks to both of you. And good luck to you as well. Ryan Costello and Brendan Boyle, our guests in this edition of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. Thanks to you both. We'll be right back.